I want to reflect a bit on the first reading and then on the gospel. Yesterday, these are texts from the book of Leviticus. Therefore, they're laws. Now, all the laws of Israel are religious laws because they're given by God. But they have to do with various things. Yesterday, if you remember, we saw how the church is not in time. Time is in the church. Time has been lifted up. It's not just the measure of the processes of the cosmos. It's measured by the acts of God, which we commemorate, we remember. That opens up a whole world of an understanding of liturgy, which I must confess, we in the West simply don't have. We're devout enough to go to Mass and the rest, but what we're doing and why we do it and what it's all for, it's been sort of lost on us. And I would like to do something about that little by little. So that was the day in which we saw that time is measured by the memory of the acts of God in history. You have to be a monotheist to even have a liturgy. Everybody else has ceremonies. They remember the king's birthday, a victory of the army, whatever they do. But they're all this worldly thing. They have nothing else because they don't know God. Now today, we did that all yesterday, we're not going to do it again. Today, in the book of Leviticus, we have not time, but land or space. And these laws are meant to accent one thing. Nobody owns the land but God. We are here as guests for 70, 80 years and then we disappear. The land stays. It belongs to God. Now, some other peoples had this notion in their own way. But you see, in Israel, it's the Yobel. That's the year of Jubilee, when everything has to be returned. And the text says, you see, you never own the land. If you buy your neighbor's land and you buy it according to how many years before you have to give it back. So in fact, you're buying the number of crops that the land can produce. And why? Because the land belongs to God. We're all guests here. And we're not here very long. That's the biblical view, yes, in a particular way, of the sacred land, Haaretz, the land, meaning Israel. But you see how these laws are permeated by the sense of the transcendent, whether it be the feast days, which all commemorate some act of God. Yom Kippur commemorates more our acts, that's why it's a Day of Atonement. But it's a vision that's blotted out so that sin is easier. And that establishing a universal government to run the whole thing is easier. And Satan, who has lots of time, and is very intelligent, knows how to do it. So as I pointed out yesterday, opening up the malls, having soccer games on Sunday morning. On one level, they just look like the momentum of culture, a bad momentum of culture, but they're more than that. How many souls have been deprived of a living knowledge of God because they're busy shopping on Sunday? They don't have time to sit and think and pray and be with their family, and care for the poor. which are the things we should be doing on Shabbat. Now our Shabbat, not only of all that, but it is the day when we remember the resurrection. I mean remember, not just recall. Remember means it's so present to you that you're different. Recall means, oh yeah, I remember that, he rose from the dead. But it's not making any impact on you. And one of the fundamental aspects of liturgy is that the acts of God are remembered biblically, and they are present. Now this text we have today, you see, is the land belongs to God. We're all guests here. And so, and no matter how rich you get, you're only borrowing it. You know, you're not going to take it with you. And that's not just a meditation on death. It's an assertion of the fact that we live in borrowed time, with borrowed money, on borrowed land. We're not here that much. And so it's a vision of life where everyone is leveled by the same realities. Weakness, death, need for forgiveness. So it shouldn't be an heroic effort to be kind to one another, to help one another. It is. But that's because we're so sinful. You see the vision there in the book of Leviticus? You see? Yeah, you're hard up. You got to sell your land. Okay, so you sit down with your neighbor. The next Jubilee year is, you see, and then. Now, commentators have a hard time with this. Even the great Roland de Roux says, this is utopia, this never happened. Other commentators say it did happen. I'll leave that to them, that's not my field. But the assertion is clear. We are guests here. The only one who's permanently owning the land is God. If we bore these things in mind, and the only one, you see, who he has prescribed for us by the word of the Lord, you've heard me do this 100 times, right? That the weeks, not the weeks, the months and the years and the days are measured by the movement of the cosmos, the sun, the moon, and so forth, right? But Sabbath is measured by the word of God. God said, keep the seventh day holy. There's nothing built into the cosmos that's going to do that. So can you see how hateful that is to Satan? They're going to stop every 7 days, turn their lives over to God. I mean, I got to stop that. And the Jews were mocked in antiquity. Can you imagine that these Jews don't work on their seventh day? When we have only a few years of our life to get money and power and pleasure, and they're so dumb. They were mocked for this. And even when it was seemed to be a good idea to have some time off, the French Revolution, everything's metric in that worldwide because it's not natural. So it was going to be the 10th day. Would be a day off. Of course, nothing to do with God. Well, people rather have the seventh day. I mean, you get more days off. Whether you're very devout or not, at least you're going to get more time off. So it didn't work. What I'm trying to point out is, especially Americans, we're not very reflective. You know, why do I go to Mass on Sunday? You know, what's the point of that one? And when the point isn't clear, they stop going, which is where we are now. Also, you see, the land, our possessions, belong to God. And they all come back down to, as Aquinas says, you know, whether happiness can consist in money. He says, how could it consist in money? When all you can really do with it is buy food to put it in your mouth. I mean, You know, you can buy clothes, you need those too. But all the other things, your cars, your travel, your TV, you know, they're not necessary for existence. You see? And so, happiness couldn't possibly consist in money, because it has to be something, whatever it is, as he goes through this whole list, it has to be something greater than we are. And money's not. It's a means to an end. And so we have these wonderful reminders. Sometime if you want, for a meditation or a retreat, it's the first part of the second part. The first five questions are on what is happiness. They distill, I'm going to quit soon now, but they distill the wisdom and the reflection of the great philosophers of the past and the great Christian saints. Huh? Happiness consists in honor? No. Why? Because honor is in the one honoring. Excellence is in the one honored, if it is. So, you can't be happy because somebody honors you, because it's in them, not you. Money, I've already gone through that one. All you can do with that is buy food and clothes. I mean, what are you going to do with it? You know? Power. And then you die. And he goes through all these. Finally, he says, what's obvious, happiness for a rational being has to be in union with God. Nothing else can make us happy. It's wonderful meditation. And so, you see, somebody who grasps that knows what to do with his borrowed goods, his land, his car, his money, his clothes, his whatever. They're borrowed. So, this wonderful Leviticus text is not just a remnant from the past. It's teaching us how to administer the gifts of God for His glory and our salvation.